Okay, it's the 8th of May, and there's a lot going on. There's a lot going on at 11 o'clock over in the amphitheater. There, oh, there's a construction going on. Oh, there's a something from the.
Obama?
No, that's LA. That's Los Angeles. What? Come in La Jolla? I thought he was going to L.A.
No, he's going to Qualcomm.
Qualcomm? Okay. Well, but over here, there's something from the Foreign Service and other stuff going on. But anyway, today in class, we're going to be continuing with margining and then maybe get to shorting. We've got some calculations to do. I want to remind people, May 29th, Thursday, the very last day of finals, is our final. And if you're not going to be in town, if you can't make it, contact me, because that's it, folks. That's the end of the semester. No opportunity for make it up. It starts actually at 8 o'clock, but I'll stick around till noon. And so I'll be here at 8, but some of you probably won't be, and I'll stick around. Okay, so what else? What else? Anything else? Anybody got a good joke? Okay, anyway, let me get into the right mood. Okay. How come Peter Pan always fly? Because he never land. That joke never grow old. What? Well, because you have to say always fly. How come he always fly? He never land. Yeah, I don't know. Just make it worse, that's all. I mean, because they're bad jokes, and so we have to make them worse. Yeah. Hey, look, folks, we might break even by the end of the semester. And this is why, that's why people say, why don't you invest in Twitter or Twitter or Tesla or Facebook? Because large losses can really make you just really sad. Because look at everybody else. Everybody else has done really well. Except for, I don't understand why Costco's not. Anybody know anything? I'm not a retail kind of guy, but the Peter Lynch would say, go look at the parking lot. Is the parking lot full?
Yeah.
That's a good sign, right? Is Costco's parking lot full? What?
They're the biggest gas supplier in the country.
Now they are? Yeah. Biggest gas supplier in the country now? But maybe, maybe it's just that the others are starting to catch up to them. I don't know. Safeway? Bonds is owned by Safeway. Yeah. Oh, okay, well. But I think, I'm not sure how much gas really contributes to Costco's bottom line. We have to do some digging into that. Yeah, I know. And they get money off the membership. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so why don't we go back and do some quick review on margining. Today we're going to do some calculations, so get your calculators out. We get to the margining and shorting exercises. And what we found is that if you are so inclined, you can borrow from your broker to enhance your return or enhance your loss, or if you just simply want to take some cash out of your account without selling your stocks, you can borrow from them in the same way a homeowner would borrow from the equity in their home using a home equity line of credit. So, I'm sorry?
Did you go to that previous slide? That one, I think it's
this one, anti-brokerage firms? What was that? Well, remember, you got to buy your stock somewhere, okay? You got to get a brokerage account. And that's why when we are using Yahoo's website, you'll see that there are ads all over the place. Fidelity, Ameritrade, hey, obviously you're interested in stocks, you need a brokerage account. But if you go with the full-service brokers, you're going to pay a lot of money in terms of commissions. You may believe that that's worthwhile. Many people don't. Many people do. But the brokerages now are pushing these wrap accounts, which I don't think are in the best interest of clients. But that's why there's chocolate and vanilla, and some people like strawberry. But another way to do it is to just simply do it yourself through these share builders, one of them. And then Better Investing has one they called Folio FN. Well, they used to have their own. I guess they just gave up on that, and now they use this folks. And what they are basically dividend reinvestment plans. The major brokerage firms have these now, where your dividends, instead of you getting cash in your pocket, the dividends are reinvested back into the stock, much like a mutual fund is. You know, when you buy a mutual fund, the dividends and capital gains are automatically, unless you ask otherwise, they will automatically be put back into the mutual fund in terms of additional shares. So if you go directly to Coca-Cola on their website, you'll see investors or Ford. You'll see, I think it says, you know, more Ford, but investors. Ah, here's the company that we have contracted with to allow you to buy your shares directly from us. And then when you receive a dividend, instead of you getting the cash, they simply buy more shares. Now, you know, tiny amounts, but hey, over time it adds up. The problem with this is, can you have, you know, have 18 different stocks and get 18 different statements? And that's it's not a big problem, but some will charge you, like Share Builder and others, a monthly fee to keep them all in one place, $10 a month or a couple bucks a month. And I've noticed more and more of them are now instituting a dollar a month charge. So if you had 18 different ones, that'd be 18. It's still cheap. It's still not that much money, folks. It's still not that much money. Questions? Yeah, did I answer your question?
Yes.
Okay. So many people will simply have a cash account, but others will decide, I want to be able to margin. I want to be able to borrow from my brokerage firm. And we went over some of the items that you need to know. The margin rate, it's actually a very good rate, you know, 1 or 2 percentage points above prime. And buying on margin allows you to magnify your returns by reducing the amount of equity that the investor must put up. The margin is the amount that the investor borrowed. It's not borrowed, the investor put up. And that drives me nuts. To me, the margin should be the part that you didn't borrow, that you didn't bring, that you borrowed, but no. So the amount of equity stated as a percentage in the statement. So a person might have brought 75% of the portfolio into the table and then borrowed 25% from their broker. Do they pay interest?
Yes.
Yes, they do. Why buy on margin? Buying on margin allows the investor to use financial leverage, which allows you to magnify your returns and magnify your losses. It also allows the investor to tap into the equity of the account without actually selling their investments, generating commissions, taxable transactions. So the idea here is, if you need some cash but you don't want to sell your shares, you can borrow from your account and then obviously either pay it back or sell the shares. The margin requirement is the initial margin. That's the amount that you must put up. And it is set by the Federal Reserve Bank, and for decades it's been 50%. So the margin requirement is 50%. You've got to come up with 50%. And the Federal Reserve Bank can change that, but they haven't changed it in years. And then the margin loan is the amount that you borrowed. And so we had an example. Let's go quickly do it again. You want to buy a $20 stock. If you bought a $20 stock and it went up to $30, you made 50% return. $10 on a $20 investment. But if instead you came, that's a funny looking brace, you came up with only $10, and what should we use? What color should we use? Green, brown. And you borrowed $10 and it went up to $30. You've made $10 on a $10 investment, which is 100% return on your investment. So lucky you, right? This is half of what you had to come up with. Instead of a 50% return, you received 100% return. But what happens, huh? What happens if the stock goes down?
Zoom.
Yeah, you're magnifying your losses. Now, if instead of going up to 30, goes down to the 10, you're wiped out. Because you borrowed $10 and 10 of it was yours, you still owe that 10 bucks. So, buying on margin magnifies your gains and magnifies your losses. And this was one of the major contributing factors to the crash of 1929. The margin requirement at the time was only 10%. If your stock goes down 10%, you borrowed 90%, 10%, you're wiped out. Now, you and I have to have 50% there. And we would get, we'll see in a few slides, a margin call. There are some hedge funds and other entities that can borrow 90% or 95%. And oh boy, can it magnify your gains if you do well. And if you do badly, you're wiped out, and then you cry to the regulators and say, we screwed up, what will you do to help us? And this is, maybe if we have time next week, we'll see. I'll talk to you next week. But there's a phenomenal film about the long-term capital management, which was a hedge fund in the 1990s that did just that. They borrowed 97% of the money that they had. It means they had 3% in their own...
The trillion-dollar bet.
That's exactly what it's called. And they almost brought down the markets in 1998. And the really bizarre, painful, exasperating, crazy thing is that it looks like a prequel to the 2007 crash. This was just one firm doing it. By 2007, there were dozens of firms doing it. And it's like The Hobbit to The Lord of the Rings, those of you who've read The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings. And so we might have time to watch that. I'm not sure. We'll see what happens. Okay, now, because margin trading is inherently more risky, you're going to be watched over like a hawk. Their computers will be watching to make sure that you don't lose too much money. As soon as you go below that 50%, your account is now restricted. If you want to do any more trades, you have to bring it back up to 50%. And the maintenance margin is the absolute bottom. It is currently set by the Federal Reserve at 25%, but your broker is allowed to raise that for you. They could look at you and say, you know what, we want it to be 35% or 40%. And once you hit that maintenance margin, you're going to get a margin call, which says, hey, you screwed up, you're losing money, you've got to make a choice. You either got to come up and bring us more cash or sell the shares. And if you don't do it within normally 72 hours, 3 days, we're going to do it for you. But they don't have to wait 72 hours. You sign when you filled out that margin agreement that they can go ahead and sell the shares without your permission to meet that margin call. And as we said, there's a saying, never meet a margin call in Wall Street, which means, you know, you're throwing good money after bad, get out of it, close out the position, run away, you've lost. Of course, and this is where we ended, as I remember, this is where we ended, right? If your investments do very well, then you can use the excess margin to buy more shares. Pyramiding, what a great name. You like that idea? I don't like that idea, but hey, you know, that's why there's some people who like to live on the edge. Now, they're lending you money. What do they want you to pay? Interest. Paying interest on the margin loan also adds yet another drag on your investment returns. Your margin investments must meet or exceed the margin interest rate in order for you to just break even. Because this $10 doesn't come for free. Now, it's a pretty good interest rate compared to credit cards and other higher interest rate loans. But still, you got to pay for it. Commissions and interest. Now you know why your broker is always so happy to take your calls, huh? So the question is, why would I buy on margin? And my easy answer is, don't do it. Okay, but that doesn't mean you have to listen to me. We're going through this because it's one of the tools that investors have in their arsenal, but I'm not one who would do it. and the risks are not worth the potential reward, in my humble opinion. However, as we said, there's a valid, logical reason for having a margin account. It allows you to temporarily borrow against your investments without having to sell them, where you don't incur commission costs, you don't trigger capital gains taxes, but you do pay interest. So would you think you'd want to do this someday after you've built up a portfolio of high-quality investments, high-quality stocks? Can't margin mutual funds, by the way. You cannot margin mutual funds. It has to be stocks. Okay, so here's some examples. These are from her book, right? I'm not sure. Stocks selling for $50. You put up $30 and borrow $20. $50 minus 20 divided by 50 is 60%. If the stock rises to $80, now you have 75% margin. So 80 minus $20 divided by $80 equals 75%. And so the margin is equal to the value of the security minus the margin loan divided by the value of the security. If the stock goes up, the stock went from 50 to 80, and we've made a very good profit. Stock falls to 25. 20%. We're below the maintenance margin. We're below the bottom line there, and we would get a margin call. All right. Traditionally, okay, I handed out this. Okay. Who didn't get one? Came in late, passed these around. Pass these around that way. Pass these this way. One or two that way. Okay. Extras? You pass them that way. Pass them that way. That way. Okay. So traditionally with margin accounts, the brokerage firms would create an account balance sheet to keep track of the account. But it's all computerized now. I took the Series 7 in 98 and they were still using these. But I don't know what they do now. I really should. I really should go back and just take the darn thing and see what's on there. Those of you who have accounting experience will recognize this as assets equals liability plus equity. It's a balance sheet. The balance sheet also makes it easier to calculate the margin because the margin is equal to the account equity divided by the total assets. So let's do a couple of these. This is from page 43. I know, it's just they do this in chapter 2. It doesn't make any sense. I think this should be done at the end of the semester. So here is the example. Where's the... There it is. You were more excited about futures, weren't you? You guys like futures more than this. Okay, so here's an example. You purchase 800 shares at $50 a share. That's $40,000. 800 shares at $50 a share is 40 grand. But you only put up $20,000 and borrow the other $20,000 from your broker. So your margin is equal to the account equity divided by the value of the securities, 50%. So let's create our 800 shares at $50 a share. Did I say $5 a share? Is $40,000. All right? Now, don't worry. We're not going to do any journal entries and trial balances. The accounting majors don't have to worry about that. Now, that's on the asset side. On the liabilities and the equity side, we brought $20,000 to the table, so our loan is $20,000. And our account equity is $20,000. And the two must always be in balance, you accounting majors, right? The assets must equal the liabilities and the equities. Make sense? Okay, let's continue. Now, the shares fall to $35. Uh-oh. The company was caught artificially inflating earnings. Ha, 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 ha. So what happens? Another counter, and we did. Where's the brown? Here it is. So what happens? If the share price falls to 35, now it's 800 shares times $35, or only 28,000. Uh-oh, we got 28,000 on this side. Well, does the loan go down? No, that's money you owe to the brokerage firm, so your account equity falls to $8,000 because the two must balance. And your brokerage's maintenance margin is equal to 30%. You take the account equity divided by the assets, and so $8,000 divided by the $28,000 is whatever it is. What is it, 28.6%? If your brokerage firm set your maintenance margin at 30%, you've got a margin call. Make sense? That makes sense? And Yosana, did you see these on your exam? Is that still on the exam? Okay, this is still on the series exam. Okay, good. So now let's do problem number one. And erase this guy right over here. Everybody got problem number one? So these will be on the series 7, folks. I can safely say that now, because that your broker, your company gave you that test, right? It was your company that gave you the sample test? Was it software? Oh, you use the other program, okay. But it was something relatively new. Okay, good. Okay, let's read number one. Who wants to read number one?
I'll read it.
Oh, Daniel, what a great guy.
Yeah, what? 5,000 to invest in DOE, Serum, and HAL, DTH, for the one to maximize your return. The start price is currently $25. What is the maximum number of shares you could purchase buying in on margin, either initial margin or requirement?
Okay, so you have $5,000 to invest in who?
Dewey,
Cheatham, and Howe. But you want to maximize your return. So the stock price is $25. What is the maximum number of shares you could purchase buying on margin if the initial margin requirement is 50%? Well, if you didn't margin, how much could you buy? How many shares? Sorry, divided by... 5,000 divided by 25 would be 200 shares. If I went to a cash, all cash balance, all cash account, I could only buy 200 shares. But if I can borrow 50%, that means I can put up 5,000. Let's use brown for what I borrowed. And I can borrow 5,000. With me? So my account is going to be 10,000. So 10,000 divided by the 25 tells me I can buy 400 shares. So now we construct the balance sheet, and our assets, when we buy the shares, will be 400 shares at currently $25 a share, or $10,000. So that's my assets. Does that make sense? Good. Good, 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 good. Now, the equity, liabilities and equities. How much did I borrow? Right. I borrowed, so the margin loan is $5,000, and my account equity is $5,000. So the balance sheet is in balance. Now, if the price of DCH falls to 17, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? So let's go use green. That's not a good one for fall, but anyway. So if it falls to 17, $400 shares times $17 a share. $6,800? You got your calculators out? I got some extras here. I need a calculator. So our assets, total assets, are now $6,800. Does the loan go down?
No.
So what's going to happen to the account equity? It's going to fall commensurate with what happened over here. And so we got $1,800. You see that, what happened? Because it's got to be in balance. So, would be the account equity divided by, and there's another formula where you take the value of the shares minus the margin loan. It's the same, 1,800 divided by the value of the security. And so what is my margin now? What's my
26.47.
Oh, is what Matthew says? Is he right?
Yes.
Okay, 26.47%. Have I got a
not yet.
Have I got a maintenance margin? Do I have a margin call yet? No, but I'm pretty darn close. I'm pretty darn close because it says, assuming the maintenance margin is 25%, would I have a margin call? No, but I'm really close. Questions, thoughts, ideas?
You're not applying the full 3,200 to the account with me. You're just doing a half million. That's with the loss from 25 to 17, it's 3,200.
3,200. So that would be the account equity would be reduced by 3,200.
Okay,
because the margin loan doesn't change. No. We lost 3,200 here.
Okay.
So we would lose 3,200 here. So our account equity would be $1,800.
Okay.
Make sense?
Yeah.
3,200 is the loss. Good. Yeah, that's good. Okay, everybody understand that? Now, these are the kind of questions. Now, I don't think they're as hard. Personally, I don't think they're as hard as the options questions. But I think they're still pretty tricky. And especially if you really, really hate accounting, which most people do. Yours truly included. Okay. All right. Good, good, good. So that was the, and these are not going to be on the final exam, folks.
Yay.
No options. No options. No. Okay. There's birthday present. Okay. All right. Now, okay, so that was margining. Now let's turn our attention to shorting, which we've danced around all semester long, and I kept telling you, we'll deal with it at the end of the semester, we'll deal with it at the end of the semester. All you got to know is you're trying to make money when the market goes down. You hear all the time people say, buy low, sell high, right? Well, you know what? It doesn't really matter which way you do it. You could buy low, sell high, or you could sell high and buy low. Huh? How does that work? No. Sell high and buy low. You're used to buy low, sell high. But it doesn't matter. You could switch the order. You could sell first and then buy later. Hold on, because it's a bit of a, okay. Buying long is normally what we think of when we think of buying stocks. Going long, are you long? Yeah, I'm long, I'm waiting for the market to go up. So a long purchase or a long position means that I'm wanting to buy low, sell high. It's a transaction in which investors buy securities in the hope they will increase in value and can be sold at a later date for profit. This is the type of transaction that people commonly think of when they hear that somebody bought stock. Buying long, by the way, is also the most common type of a transaction. It's the expectation of dividends or capital appreciation or both. Buy low, sell high. So you purchase one share of common stock for $20, the market rises to $30, congratulations, you made $10 on a $20 investment, that's a 50% increase. Of course, if the price dropped $10, you'd have a 50% decrease. This is what you're used to, right? So now you have a name for that. If you believe the market's going to go up, you're buying shares to hold on to them, get dividends, and the value's to increase, you are going long. You are buying long. You are purchasing long. You are in a long position. The opposite of that is shorting. Shorting selling short, going short, short position, shorting the stock, they all mean the same thing. You sell a borrowed security. You sell a stock that isn't yours. You eventually repurchase those shares and return them to the lender. Now, doesn't that sound illegal? No. What do you think they do when you deposit your money in the bank? Do they sit on it? No, they lend it out. So when you deposit, so to speak, your shares at your brokerage firm, somebody else comes along and says, you know, I think that 3D Systems is going to go down. Why did I use 3D? I don't know, whatever stock it is. You own 100 shares of Butterfly.com. And somebody else thinks it's going to go down. So what they'll do is they will borrow the shares from you. Now, do you know this happens? No, it's all done in the back office. That's what they call it, the back office. It's all done by the brokerage firm. And the brokerage firm says, you know, if things go wrong, we'll take care of it. If somehow, you know, somehow they sell the shares and you need to have your shares back, we'll deal with it. So you don't even know it happens. If you sell short, are hoping that the price goes down. So what you're doing is you're selling high, or so you believe, and then later on you hope to be able to buy low. So you see, it's the same thing that we've been doing or thinking about doing. It's just in reverse. Selling short must take place in a margin account. So before you can sell short, you have to apply for a margin account. They're going to do a credit check to make sure that you pay your bills on time. Since you're borrowing the stock that you plan to sell from the brokerage firm. Make sense so far? Or the first time you explain this to people, certainly the first time it was explained to me, usually they say, isn't that illegal? Sell something you don't own? And I think I may have given you this story. I don't know if I have this example. This is what I tell people. Say you know, you have two neighbors, Fred and Charlie, And you know, Fred just bought this brand new riding lawnmower. Did I tell you this? Yeah, I did. And you know it costs $500, and you know it's going to go on sale for $250 tomorrow at Sears or wherever. And so you say, "Hey, Fred, can I borrow it?" And he says, "Oh, I guess so." Then you take it over to Charlie because you know Charlie wanted to buy one. You say, "Hey, Charlie, got one of these things. You want to buy it?" "Okay, yeah, I'll buy it." You pocket the $500. Next day, the price goes down. You go buy it back and give it back to Fred. You understand? And you made whatever, $200, $250. Now, it sounds illegal. But no, it's perfectly legit. You, when you fill out the margin agreement, you're promising you're going to bring back the shares. So, it happens. It happens. And there are some people who really don't like selling short, by the way. Peter Lynch, by the way, tells you never to sell short. And this was 2005 and 2006, and I kept saying, short GM, they're going under. The next recession, they're going to be history. Short GM. And I kept hearing Peter Lynch in my head, don't sell short. When you sell short, you're really hoping that somebody does poorly. And that goes against my grain, because I want everybody to win, right? I want everybody. I want the pie to get bigger and everybody to win, because then we all do better. So Peter Lynch says don't sell short, so that's good enough for me. Here's how it works. You think this stock's going to go down. So you borrow the stock from another shareholder without their knowledge, and you sell it on the open market. You receive money for selling stock that you do not own. You then wait for the stock price to go down and buy it back at the lower price, pocketing the difference. So you have to turn around and buy this stock back. You can't just walk away. You buy long, you can hold on to the stock until you die and then bequeath it to your kids or whatever. The shareholder you borrowed the shares from never knows that the shares were borrowed. The brokerage firm does all the financial sleight of hand. And as I said, it's called the back office. The back office, the bean counters, the accountants, the bookkeepers in the back office, they're the ones taking care of all this. By the way, what happens if the stock pays dividends? Whoopee. What if the stock pays dividends? You got to pay him. Because that shareholder who owns the 100 shares of IBM or whatever doesn't own them anymore because they've been sold. So now, somebody else got the dividends, right? You, as the short seller, have agreed that you're going to buy that 100 shares of IBM back. And in the meantime, if IBM declares dividends, you've got to pay those dividends. Make sense? Yeah, I know. It sounds like it should be illegal, but it's not. So here's how it works. Today, you buy the shares from somebody. I mean, so you borrow the shares from somebody, and then you sell them. Sell high. In the hopes that the market's going to fall, or that the price of that shares are going to fall. And then you buy them back and return the shares. If the price goes down, you've made money. If the price goes up, it's like a mirror, right? We're hoping that the price goes up when we go long, and if the price goes down, we lose. But when we sell short, if the price goes down, we make money. And if the price goes up, we lose money. And it turns out that you can lose money a whole lot faster when you short than when you go long. So here's an example. You sell a stock short for $20. So let's get our blue. Which one color? Green? I don't know. Or whatever. Colors. So you sell a stock short for $20. You borrowed the shares from somebody. Now what happens? When you sell a stock, what do you get? You get the money. So you get the $20. It's in your, well, it's not in your pocket, it's in your account. And even though the stock was not yours because you borrowed it from somebody else, you went ahead and sold it. Now what happens if the stock price goes down to $10? See what can you do? You can do now? You still got the $20. So what you do is you buy it back at $10 and then you return the shares, closing out the transaction. You give the stock back to the person you borrowed it from. They never knew any difference. Yes?
I was just wondering, but why would someone want to let someone borrow the shares?
They don't even know what happens.
Oh,
it's in the brokerage agreement that they never read. That the brokerage firm can use their shares as this kind of, whatever they call it. I call it financial sleight of hand.
So they don't know about it.
You don't even know it. And what's going to happen? If things go badly for the brokerage firm, the short seller disappears or whatever, then the brokerage firm will make good on it. Now, the full-service brokerage firms, if you sell short, even if they have to go out and buy more shares because the original owner wanted their shares to sell them or whatever or move somewhere else, the Merrill Lynch's and the Morgan Stanley's, they'll go out and just buy more shares for that buyer, for that person who held the shares. But if the buyer that you borrowed the shares from sold their shares, now you're in trouble, right? If the company won't back it up. So Scott Trades and TD Waterhouses, now it's called TD Ameritrade, those deep discount brokers, if the person whose shares, who's the owner who never even knew it was borrowed, if they say to TD Ameritrade, go ahead, sell my shares, and they don't have any shares from somebody else that they can borrow, they'll go back to you, the short seller, and say, sorry, your position's been closed out because this shareholder wants their shares now, so we have to buy them back on the market. You with me? Now, I don't know if they still do this, but that's what they were doing as of a few years ago because they're deep discounts. But Merrill Lynch or Morgan Stanley or UBS or one of the bigger firms, they'll just go out and buy more shares and then close out the transaction. For the person who was the owner of the shares, you'll still be in your short position. But you're paying $100 a transaction or $80 a transaction, not $5, $7. Make sense? Okay. Okay, good question. Okay, now, you sold the shares, sell high at 20, bought them back at $10. You made $10 on a $0 investment. Does that sound like that's going to fly? No. They don't let you do that. No. You cannot really make $10 on a $0 investment. It is a margin account, remember, because you're borrowing. You borrowed the stock that you sold. The rules, I erased it. The rules for the margin account still apply. You must put up the initial margin requirement, which is 50%. And you say, 50% of what? Well, 50% of what you borrowed. What? I don't understand. I borrowed the shares. I had to put up 50% of shares? No. You have to put up 50% of the proceeds from the sale of the borrowed stock. Because you borrowed the stock, you sold, you have to come up with the 50% of the proceeds. So you got $20, you got to come up with 10. Again, the brokerage firms use the account balance sheet to keep track of the investor's margin, and we'll take a look at some examples. So here's that same example. You sell a stock short for $20, and you receive the $20, but even though the stock was not yours, you borrowed it, the stock price now goes up to $40. Remember, you borrowed the shares. You have to buy them back. You now have to buy the shares back at $40 to put them back in the account. Remember, you borrowed the shares. You with me? You understand what's going on here? So this person lost big time. In fact, this would not be allowed. They would not allow it, unless it happened in one day, which is rare, but it happens. You just lost $20 on your short transaction. When you buy long, you can only lose the purchase price of the stock. You buy a stock for $20, it goes to zero, you lost $20. Once it hits zero, can it go any lower? No. But when you sell short, there is no limit to the amount of money you can lose. Theoretically, there's no limit because there's no limit to the price of the stock. Now, what's going to happen? Before you get anywhere near here, assuming it doesn't happen in one day, the brokerage firm is going to hit you with a margin call. And if you don't respond within a timely period, depending on, 72 hours is the max, then they're going to do it for you. They're going to close out the transaction for you. And because you've signed, you agreed to the margin agreement, that's perfectly legal. The price can always go higher. And that also limits the amount of money you can make. When you sell short, you can only make that amount, assuming the company goes bankrupt and the stock becomes zero, which is, it happens, but it's rare. There's a saying about selling short, which you might like, I don't know. He who sells what isn't his'n must buy it back or go to prison. It's not true. I mean, we don't have debtors' prisons anymore, folks. Fraud is another thing. Fraud you can go to jail for. But we don't have debtors' prisons anymore. And there's a example of an investor lost, I think it was, I can't remember the number, $187 million. This is a very wealthy person. But he went bankrupt. And the brokerage firm was Schwab, which is, I was surprised they were using Schwab. But he, during the internet bubble of the late 1990s and the technology bubble and Microsoft and Dell and Oracle and Intel and Cisco were going skyrocketing, and so was some companies you've never heard of because they're gone, like CMGI and DrCoop.com and TheGlobe.com and MP3.com and all these internet companies. And this guy was sure that the tech bubble was going to burst. And he was absolutely right. But he was way too soon. And he lost a total of $187 million or $178 million, whatever it was. It was almost $200 million. And he was bankrupt. And who had to cover all the losses? Yeah, the brokerage firm had to cover the losses. Now, I was surprised they let him go as long as they did. But once you get up into that, when you're worth tens of millions of dollars. Yeesh. Here's the calculation. You take the margin deposit plus the short sale proceeds minus the value of the security divided by the value of security. If the stock were sold short at $20, you would have to deposit the $10 because the margin deposit would be $10 plus the short sales minus the value of the security divided by 20 or 50%, 10 divided by 20. Again, we use the account balance sheet to make the calculation easier. So here's the problem on page 49. I'm going to erase this. Excuse me. You think TI, Texas Instruments, and I don't know why they picked on Texas Instruments, because it's a pretty good company.
I don't think they make very much money off of calculators anymore. But
I think, didn't they have a big fight with Qualcomm over the cell phone?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Qualcomm won, didn't they?
Yeah.
Qualcomm did won, so good for them. Not that Texas Instruments is really based in Texas anymore. It's a global company, and so is Qualcomm. But any chance to piss off Texas is good to me. Okay. You ever been to Texas?
Yeah.
My condolences. Color, or whatever. All right, now, so you are sure Texas Instruments is going to sell, right? It's going to fall. So you sell it short. Your betting is going to go down. So you short 100 shares, right? 100 shares times $30 a share, and that's the proceeds from the sale of the stock. Now, it doesn't change because that transaction's already occurred. You called your broker, you went online and said, "Broker, I want to sell short." And you'll see there's a place for you to pick long or short, and long will be the option. Long will be the default option. And if you sell short, you already have to have a margin account. You've already talked to your broker. So you're going to receive $3,000. This will not change. All right? Now, they're going to say, you got to come up with 50% of that. So your initial margin deposit will be 50% of that. So $1,500. Make sense? Because they ain't going to let you borrow it without you coming up with 50%. That's the law. And who set that? The Federal Reserve Bank has been 50% for decades. So your total on the side of the assets is $4,500. Now, this side's not going to change unless we come up with more money. This is never going to change because that transaction's already been done. Now, over here, we have the short position. And what is that? That's $3,000 because the stock is worth $30 and we have 100 shares. So the account equity is $1,500. Because this is going to have to be paid back. This is going to have to be returned eventually. Right now, we're hoping that the price goes down. So, you with me where we're at? The stock of the stock price of TI falls to $20 a share. So now your short position will fall. So we have 100, let's use a different color. 100 shares now at $20 a share. Because this has already been, that transaction's already happened. That's not going to change. So this $30 doesn't change. That's the day you sold it short. That's the price. But now it's fallen to $20. So what's this now worth? $2,000. 100 shares times $20 a share or $2,000. Well, what happens to our account equity? Because this has to balance this, our account equity now would go up to $2,500. Does that make sense? Because the price of the shares went down, the value of our account equity, has gone up, and these two are still in balance. The short position fell, the account equity rose, you made money because the stock price fell. Got it? I know it's tricky. Some of the trickiest parts of the Series 7. What would happen if the stock price were to rise to 40 bucks? Now, let's use a different color. What colors we got here? We got green, green. I don't have orange. Where's my brown? I don't have red either. I need red. Here's brown. Let's use brown. So now, what were to happen, instead of the stock price falling, it were to rise 100 shares at $40 a share, what would this be?
4,000.
So instead of our account equity going up, our account equity now would go down to 500. $500 account equity divided by the value of the securities is 12.5%. This would not be allowed to happen, assuming it didn't happen in one day because, you know, TI all of a sudden became really, really popular. And your brokerage would have given you a margin call a long time ago. And now here's the formula to compute at what price, as the price goes up, at what price would you hit a margin call? And it's tricky, but it's not, I mean, if you plug it into your calculator. And so if you sold 100 shares at $20 a share, your proceeds would be $2,000. You would deposit $1,000, and the maintenance margin is 25%. So you plug in all those numbers, and it turns out that if you sell short at $20, that stock only has to go up to $24 before your broker is going to call you, or you're going to get an email saying you're at the maintenance margin. You need to, you have a margin call. You need to close out the position or bring more cash to the table. You see? Selling short, dear students, is very risky. The brokerage firm is going to keep a close eye on you. Do I suggest that you sell short? No. Peter Lynch says don't sell short. Who am I to argue with Peter Lynch? What you will hear I'm sorry? What did you say?
He has a brother or something.
What did he? Who has a brother?
No, I was telling him something.
Oh, okay, okay. All right, so you want to do another problem?
Yeah.
No? Okay, well, here we are. Got the calculation. All right. Because I'll read. Who wants to read? Daniel, you want to read again?
Yeah.
Okay, let Daniel read again.
That BCH has been such a dog, did you decide to try shorting the stock? It is currently trading for $10 a share. If you short 400 shares, what will be the proceeds from the sale of the transaction, and how much will you need to deposit? The initial margin requirement is 50%.
Okay, so our assets, liabilities, and equities. So, you decide to sell short because it's been a dog. If you short 400 shares, what will be the proceeds from the sale of this transaction? How much will you need to deposit? So 400 shares, and what is the price now? $10. So what are we going to get? The proceeds from the sale, the short sale, will be $4,000. And then what do we got to do? We got to come up with the initial margin loan of $2,000. Everybody see that? 50% of what we, of the proceeds. So our account value will be $6,000. Now, when we start off, the short position will be exactly the same. It will be 400 shares times $10 a share, or $4,000, and then our account equity will be $2,000, and the let's say account value.
It's not the account value.
This is the total assets. Total assets, and then the total liabilities and equities are $6,000. Everybody understand that? That's the first one. B2B. Now, what happens if the stock price rises to 12? Oosh, what's going to happen? Yes, what's going to happen is... you hear Matthew? What's going to happen if the price goes up to 12? Now, is this ever going to change? No, because we've already done this transaction. So this doesn't change. And this doesn't change unless we bring more money to the table. But over here, now, the price is going up to 12, so 400 times 12 is? You're letting Matthew have all the fun. $4,800. What's going to happen to our equity? it's going to go down by the same amount because these two have to stay in balance. So, what happens? Assuming the maintenance margin is 30%, will you have a margin call if the price rises to 12? Take 1,200 divided by 4,800. 25% says Matthew. Will we have a margin call? Margin call? Yeah, we would. I know. Isn't that amazing? Only a $2 rise, folks. For some stocks, that's a little high, 20%. Yeah, 20%, but a couple of days, yeah. But no, some stocks jump at 20% in a day. It doesn't happen often, but it happens. So, what do you think, folks? You want it short? Me neither. Okay, good. All right, now.
But how was Bill Ackman, how was he able to keep his position for like a year?
That's a good question. I guess he just kept bringing more money to the table. You know, that's a good question. Or the brokerage firm. Once you get into that world where you're a high roller with billions of dollars or millions of dollars, they treat you differently. And he's talking about a gentleman by the name of Bill Ackman who runs a celebrated hedge fund. And he's one of these, they call him activist investors. I wouldn't call him an investor. He's a trader. He's a speculator. But he goes after firms and says, I think Herbalife is a pile of crap, and it's a Ponzi scheme. Now, what is he doing? He's trying to knock the price down. Why? Because he's already shorted the stock. You understand? So we say he's talking his book. He's trying to get people to do what would make him wealthier. And Herbalife shot back and said, you're out of your mind. We sell a bona fide product, and we have it's a multi-level marketing business. It's not a pyramid scheme. The Justice Department is never investing, or maybe now they're investing him. Now they're investing in you. But there are pyramid schemes which are illegal, but multi-level marketing businesses are not in and of themselves illegal unless they're not selling a real product, in which case that's a Ponzi scheme. So Herbalife was selling. I love that bumper sticker. Did I tell you about the bumper sticker? It says, lose weight now. Ask me how. And then there was a joke. It said, get laid now. Ask me how. It's a joke. Okay, it's a joke. You don't like it, you don't have to like it. Okay, but that's what Bill Ackman was doing. And that's what the, I don't know if you remember this quote, the market can stay irrational longer than you can stay solvent. There were short sellers who were complaining the market was too high, and they went to Lord Maynard Keynes, John Keynes, you heard Keynesian economics, and they were complaining to him, this is irrational, the market's irrational, it's too high. We're losing our shirts, you know, because we're shorting. And Mr. Keynes, Sir Lord, or whatever his name was, Sir John Keynes, said, the market can stay irrational longer than you can stay solvent. And that's a very famous saying now. Now, a short squeeze. When the market is going down, you will see it drop precipitously. What's happening? Momentum investors will often short stocks to try to take advantage of the down momentum, just as they buy stocks as the market's going up. What does that do? That makes it go down further. But it's like a compressed spring. Because what has to happen to all those shares? They have to be bought back. So you will see this happen with a stock or a market as a whole. You'll see it going along and all of a sudden be a precipitous drop. And people say, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Now wait a couple of days and then bing, it goes back up again. Because all those short sellers must cover their positions. They must buy back the shares. The subsequent up movement of the market is often dramatic as short sellers are caught in a squeeze. They have to cover their positions. They have to buy back the shares. And the amount of shares that have been sold short is called the short interest. So we could take a look. What do you think? What companies do you think are going to go down, folks?
3D printing.
Too late. They already went down. But let's take a look at 3D printing and let's see what the short interest is. So if you go to key statistics, over here on the, excuse me, the right side. Okay, so here are the shares outstanding, 103 million shares, and 29 million of them, 29.5 million, are sold short. So the short interest is 30%. which is, that's a lot.
Yeah.
So in other words, many, many traders, because most, we should call them investors, but I call them traders. Anybody who shorts in my book is a trader, is a speculator. And they really believe that that 3D printing is going to go down. In fact, the number of shares that were sold short prior month were only 27 million. So more and more people are selling short. Now what's going to happen? If 3D printing turns around, maybe they have some positive news, what are all those short sellers going to have to do? They're going to have to buy back the shares. If 3D printing keeps going down the porcelain oasis, do they have to buy them back? No. If it goes bankrupt, the short sellers win. But if we did our research, which we didn't do, we should really go in and do more research on that. And if we believe 3D printing is going to do well, then now would be a great time to buy. Not when we bought. Now that it's down 40%, maybe it's a great time to buy. But you understand short interest, short squeeze? Make sense? And why don't we look at some other company that is pretty stable, like, let's say Exxon. See what they say. Key Statistics. Come on. Exactly. Look, there are 4.29 billion shares out there, and how many have been sold short? 54 million. So 1.2%. Do investors think that Exxon's gone down? No. Makes sense? Doesn't mean they're right, but I'm just saying that's the idea. Okay, good. We beat this horse dead. Okay, let's keep going. Oh, by the way, in August of 2002, I was getting really, really, I was like, oh, man, maybe I should sell. When I start thinking that, that's bad. And what happened is short interest was the highest it had ever been in the history of the United States stock market in 2002. It went higher even in 2009. That gave me great comfort because it meant to me that we were close to the end of the market. So when you hear that short interest is really, really high, that's usually a sign that things are going to get better. Actually, there used to be a valid reason. Used to, but not anymore. They got rid of it in 1997. It was called shorting against the box. And don't ask me why, because it's a stupid name. But you shorted a stock that you already owned. Huh? Why would you short a stock that you already owned? Well, it allowed you to sell the stock without creating a taxable transaction until you closed out the transaction with your own stock. So you could sell the stock short in December, receive the money in December, and then deliver your shares in January, effectively postponing the taxes until the next year. Guess what? The IRS said, no. If you sell shares that you own, you've sold the shares. That's it. That's basically what they're saying. So you can't even do that anymore. So my advice is never short a stock. And the very last slide is one that we've already seen, just seeing if I can get you, because this class there's not too many people. Anyone interested in becoming a broker? Yusana is. Anybody else? Daniela? Remember, they need more women. They need more head funds. Good luck. You know, what can I say? Good luck. Now, we have a few moments left, and that's it for... We mentioned them in Chapter 4. Hedge funds are not mutual funds. They don't come up... Okay, I need your baffle the brokers. I gave them out on Tuesday, and you all forgot them, didn't you? Did you forget them? All right, don't go away. Who needs a baffle the broker? See, Southwestern is going bankrupt.
Yay.
So don't buy stock in Southwestern because we're having to keep them. So please, any question you all have about finance, about investing, about stocks, bonds, mutual funds, shorting, hedge funds. What is hedge funds are not mutual funds, folks. Mutual funds. Okay. Hedge funds. Yeah, baffle the broker. If you weren't here on Tuesday, then this is the first time you've seen it. Quick, let's do baffle the broker. Baffle the broker is the last day of class. What we do is we turn all your questions into a presentation, and I throw in some of my own that I like, and that's our last day. So that's not this Tuesday, but the next Tuesday, and that's it. We're over. We've done the instruction. So please ask any question. Where do babies come from? Why is the sky blue? Who makes mayonnaise? How do you make mayonnaise? Yes. We'll go over the final. Bring your questions. Now, hedge funds. Hedge funds are not regulated like mutual funds. They do not come under the Investment Company Act of 1940. They don't have to have 20 different securities. They can invest all their money in one stock if they wanted to. They can short. They can leverage, meaning they can margin. And they're very dangerous. They charge very high fees. Some of them are incredibly profitable, and others are horribly awful. Well, yes and no. Buffett is not a hedge fund. Buffett's a holding company. His holding company is Berkshire Hathaway. And he buys companies and brings them into the fold. And you've heard of many of the companies. You've heard of Geico. And what else? Fruit of the Loom. Well, he doesn't own all of Coke, but he owns a lot of Coke. He owns a lot of Procter & Gamble, a lot of McDonald's. What else? He owns See's Candy. Buffett's company, Berkshire Hathaway. So he's a very, very savvy investor. And remember, come on, I want you to fill these out today. Don't bring them back Tuesday because you won't bring them back. Come on, you got 5 minutes. Fill them out today. That's why I gave them out. I gave them out to you on Tuesday. You didn't bring them back today, did you? Any question you have? Any question? You don't got any questions? Kirby?
Yeah, Kirby.
I don't know if he owns Kirby. I don't know. He invested heavily in a Chinese company called BYD that makes batteries and also has come up with cars. And so far, the cars that they've been creating are horrible. Did he buy BNSF?
Yeah, and then it's a thing from the last couple of years.
Oh, Burlington Northern.
Yeah.
Okay, I was thinking BASF. He bought Burlington Northern Santa Fe. See, if you remember, his advice to investors is don't buy a stock, buy a company. If you would want to own the whole company, if you could, if you want to, come on, fill these out. Come on, what are you doing? Okay. If you would want to own the whole company, go ahead and buy 10 shares. And that's his advice, which is excellent advice because that's exactly what you're doing. You're buying a part of the company. But he's so big now, he buys the whole company. So they buy the whole company. And they're sitting on tons of cash. So all he has to do is wait for the phone to ring. And somebody's like, hey, we need cash. Okay, fine. Let's see. Let's talk. What kind of terms? And in 2008, Goldman Sachs and GE both were in deep kimchi, folks. You've been in kimchi?
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah. And they needed cash. And so he sold them, they sold him preferred shares that had tremendous benefits. It made a ton of money. Of course, he had $5 billion to invest in them. If you have $5 billion cash to give to people, they will give you a very good deal. Yeah. Any other questions? Any other thoughts? So my advice, stay away from hedge funds. Stay away. You may do well. And they have huge fees. They take 2% of your money, which is, good mutual fund, 1% or less, and they take 20% of the profit. So if it goes up 10%, that means they're going to take 2% as annual operating expenses and then 2% of the profits, so you've made 6%. SAC was taking more than 2%, Stephen?
Like 4% and 50% profit.
4%.
That's like $4 billion on his own money.
But 4% and 50% of the profits. Mm-hmm. Why are you standing?
Going to a family operation.
Yeah, I can imagine, after they go to jail. Okay, so any other questions?
Nope. I wrote it on my paper.
You wrote it on your paper. So one of my favorites is, if you're so smart, how come you're not rich? That's what I like to tell people. If you're so smart, how come you're not rich? Or why is the sky blue? Why is the sky? Why don't? Okay, all right. So Tuesday we will do we'll start real estate, other investment alternatives. We'll take a look at retirement accounts. And so I'll see you on Tuesday. Baffle the brokers. Any question whatsoever?
I don't even know. I can't leave, by the way.